The Metal Demimonde by Nick Wolven. Narrated by Sunila Nankani.
Tipper's in the south parking lot when her phone starts going mad. Not just ringing. It's a tone she's never heard before. High and warbling. Almost a scream. She's halfway up the fairway before she places it. An alarm. The ride. She bumps through the crowds, heedless of complaints, her lineman's boots crushing foam cups and toes. Breakdown. That's the word that's in her head, along with a few others. Accident. Screw up. Yeah, you screwed up, kid. Big time. The rides clash and swoop overhead, flinging screaming riders at the stars. Snake is located near the end of the fairway, where the grounds trail off into grit and chaparral. Even from a distance, behind the bulk of the haunted house, Tipper can see the ride stretched out like a beached leviathan, the tubular body sprawled in the dirt, lights all down it twinkling emergency colors, orange, yellow, red. The mouth gapes hugely like a crimson castle door. Escape hatches along the sides have popped open to show steel ribs. In the lurid aura of the haunted house, the thing looks like some dying dragon felled by a southwestern St. George. But it's not dead, only paralyzed, screaming a mechanical plea through Tipper's phone. She thumbs the screen and shuts off the alarm. The ride is surrounded by a mob of gawking bystanders. Tipper pushes through and vaults the aluminum fence. Susie is standing by Snake's mouth, all 10 fingers curled in her tufty hair. The wrinkles in her metalhead concert tee twitch with agitation. Tipper pulls off her sleeveless hoodie as she jogs up, panting in mouthfuls of the desert night.
Susie, I'm sorry. I just got the buzz. What's wrong with...
Before Susie can answer, another woman steps out from behind the ride. Amy Carter is pure carny, long-boned and lean, with a trailing gray braid that runs down to her white jeans. She runs the haunted house, or as she likes to put it, keeps the gate to Dracula's castle. Her gray eyes screw hard into Tipper's.
Supposed to be back half an hour ago, weren't you, kid?
Tipper falters.
What were you doing? Getting cuddly with some boy behind the bathrooms? You think this isn't a real job?
Dial it down, Carter. Just a notch.
Susie's face is round, smooth-cheeked, and somehow always seems to be smiling. She puts a hand on the back of Tipper's neck.
There's nothing Tipper could have done, even if she was here.
Snake's got something caught in her throat, that's all.
Tipper tries to look cool as she clumps up to the ride.
So someone got stuck? No one's hurt, are they?
You better damn well hope not.
Carter stomps into the ride's wide mouth. Susie pats Tipper's arm.
They're not hurt. Don't worry. Snake had never let that happen.
It's true. Snake could never put anyone in danger. Safety first, right? It's in the wiring. Tipper follows the two women into the ride's gullet, between the big foam rubber fangs. The machine is a tender behemoth, incapable of harming a human being. But here's the problem. Always the problem. What if a human being decides to harm Snake? From the ride's mouth, Tipper has a great view of the fairgrounds, framed in the robot's arching jaws. Over the tent arcade, the Screamosaurus chomps at the stars. Octowhip, the Land Shark, the abominable Go, Go, Go Man. They're all here, waving segmented arms, dancing like giants, giving loads of shrieking riders the time of their lives.
At moments like this, Tipper feels a kind of aching self-consciousness, like a sunburn all over her body. Who is she but another lost kid trying to look older than her age? Skinny hips, brown face, clothing too bulky for the Arizona climate. A child of the fringe, with nothing to keep her going but an outsize attitude. Susie trusts her, though. 1 month into the job, and Susie is already letting Tipper share responsibility for Snake. She can see it, Susie says. Tipper has the touch, the feel. You got the magic, kid. I always know. It's a good thing to hear in these lonely desert nights when the fair shuts down and the rides go to sleep, settling on their lots like weary monsters. As their engines click into silence, Susie sits in the door of her trailer, bottle of Cuervo between her knees, and takes in the phantasmagoria with a hand. You know what I mean? I mean love. Seriously. You want to be a ride operator? You got to love these things like your own two hands. These aren't your granddad's rides, some swivel-mounted cages on a rotating frame. These are beasts. They need TLC. And I'll tell you something. If you give that to them, they'll return it a thousandfold. Tipper's brothers would say that's crazy talk. Carny superstition, technophilia. But in the juniper smell of the carnival night, with saurian heads bobbing against the moon, when you're puffing homegrown pot under bowers of luciferase lights, and those cool Sonoran breezes come up with just a whiff of kerosene, how could you want any other kind of life? Trust, Susie'll say. That's what it comes down to. The beautiful trust between woman and machine. Hey, Tip! The snap of Susie's fingers is muffled in the ride's padded throat. You okay? Speechless, feeling ridiculous, Tipper turns and follows her down the red tunnel. Snake is one of the smaller rides, intended for younger kids and their parents. Bloated with extra padding, painted non-threatening colors, it has the googly eyes of a family attraction. Synthetic flesh of gel-packed polyfabric masks the feedback systems. The thigmotaxics, the thixotropic sensors and servos that keep riders bouncing along. You'd have to try to get hurt inside Snake, and even then you'd probably be okay. Like a princess oversensitive to a pea, Snake would smother you in loving cushions, push you along through a gentle peristalsis, and pop you out into the world unharmed. The kids love it, getting swallowed and expelled, then rushing around to do it again. The ride seems to exorcise some childish fear. Tipper herself always feels queasy in here. She keeps close to Susie, stumbling on the padded floor, trying not to touch the slightly grubby walls. One thing about Snake, the ride may be safe, but you can only swallow so many children per day without picking up a few not totally wholesome odors. Snake is self-cleaning, so most of the puke and pee and food is masked with an alcoholic tang of disinfectant. Still, Susie? Tipper pauses 10 feet down the throat. The ride is stiff, but not quite straight. They've lost sight of Carter around the curve. Susie turns. Listen, Tipper says. I'm really sorry. I was in the parking lot, and I don't know what happened. I guess I dropped a mental digit or something. Tip? Susie braces herself against the bouncy walls. I've been at this a long time, okay? These rides, They're like dogs. Big, friendly, and dumb. They get in trouble. It happens. I know. I'm saying, though, what I did, it was totally stupid, and I won't ever... Ah. Susie waves her hands by her ears. It's history. I've already forgotten it. But I'm sure you had your reasons. Susie's face creases, and for a moment, Tipper can see how old she is. At least 50, maybe more. A whole life, probably not a happy one, etched in those plump Chinese features. If I cared about punctuality, you think I'd be working the grounds? Think I'd be tending to this dumb brute? Susie gives the wall an affectionate whap. We're all hopeless screw-ups. Down here in the metal demimonde. Tipper nods. She still wishes she could explain. The thing is, I haven't even told you why I was... But Susie reaches out, holding Tipper's hot face between her hands. This is a woman who spends her life wrangling metal monsters the size of tractor trailers. A woman used to being in control. Tip? Listen, you're one of us now. You're a robot wrangler, a monster rider, and you're literally standing in the belly of the beast. It's just me and you down here, and we've got to look out for each other. Right? Right. It's a nice moment, until the screaming starts. Tipper's first to move, bounding down the jiggling tube. Already she can hear occasional giggles between the cries. The screams themselves edge higher, becoming falsetto. False. Something weird is going on here. Another bend, and Tipper slams into Carter's jean-jacketed back. The screams break into boyish laughter. Help! I'm being eaten! I think my scrotum's caught! Carter's face is like something out of her haunted house. You! She jabs a finger. Enough! Move! Clutching Carter's shoulder, standing on tiptoes, Tipper can see two boys wedged into the pillowed tunnel, feet and hands jammed into the walls like a couple of throat-choking chicken bones. The smart foam is pulsing around them, spasming like a misfiring muscle as the ride tries to shake them loose. This is the only way to jam the ride. You have to give it everything you've got. Guys? Susie squeezes past them, frowning at the boys. Come on already. There's kids waiting to ride. Hey, ma'am, is it our fault your ride's not safe? I'm really stuck. This is like misleading advertising. Some poor little innocent child could lose a testicle. More snickers. Out. Susie's thumb jerks at an exit. With a laugh, the boys let go and drop to the cushioned floor. The foamy muscles of the throat stop twitching. You can almost hear the ride's sigh of relief. Susie stands over them. Get elsewhere, fellas. Fast. I don't know, ma'am. I'm pretty shook up. The older boy winces theatrically, rubbing his elbows. That was a kind of traumatic experience. I feel like I might need some time to recover. Susie's thumb is not in a humoring mood. It becomes a standoff, the boys laughing, Susie's thumb jerking, till one of the guys happens to notice Tipper. It's like someone pushed a button. The boy's childish attitude drops away. He jumps to his feet, reaches for his friend. All right, man, come on, that's enough. The other kid, younger and smaller, doesn't pick up the hint. I don't know, man. I think this ride is, like, molesting me. Enough, dick. They stand together, balanced on the padding.
a couple of fringe kids in workmen's clothes. You'd never guess that 10 seconds ago they were acting like a pair of giggling toddlers. The tall one nods. "Hey there, Tipper." Tipper can feel Susie staring. She suddenly has a fantasy of the foam walls flexing, shaking, bouncing her toward some place far away from here. Susie squints. "Tip? You know these idiots?"
Sort of. Tipper flinches. "I mean, we only..."
"We're friends," says the older boy. "Well, acquaintances." Susie's squint contracts. With a shake of her head, Tipper staggers across the wobbly floor, grabs the tall boy by the elbow.
"Come on,"
she hisses, ushering him to the exit hatch. Amazingly, the boy obeys. Out in the open, the noise of the fair explodes into salience. Tipper drags the two guys back between the trailers.
"What are you doing here?"
The tall one takes her hand. "What do you think?" Without warning, he grabs Tipper by the arms, pulls her toward him.
"Luke,"
she begins. But already he's kissing her, holding her head with his hands, and Tipper just knows, all the way from her head to her boots, that she's in serious trouble. It started 3 nights ago, in the land of orphans. Orphans, that's what the carnies call the independent rides. Most of them are ungainly clunkers, exposed works, wheezy pistons. They're self-sufficient, but without human help, the fairgoers tend to feel leery about riding them. The orphans hunker at the edge of the grounds, silent and neglected, accompanied only by the service bots that tighten their screws and top up their fluids. Like a bunch of old crocodiles, Tipper thinks, getting picked over by Egyptian plovers. There's something sadly romantic about the orphans. Tipper likes to come out here on break, sit with a bucket-sized cup of Coke, and bask in the silence of these patient old machines. Usually, the orphans sit near the parking lot, and Tipper's view is of auto-drive cars lined in arrays, tight and neat as corn kernels. Beyond the lattice of windshields, she can just make out the lights of a typical southwestern burb. Lawns dead from water rationing, shuttered factories, hard luck malls, the fringe. That's where Tipper was 3 nights ago, when she heard laughter from among the machines. She gulped her hot dog, put down her Coke, and picked her way through the thicket of steel limbs. And there they were. Gathered in the shadow of Tentaculus, 4 boys were passing around a vapor pipe. Perfect stereotypes, these guys, with their caveman beards, their mechanics' jumpsuits, their construction vests and Pan Am coats. All of them affecting the styles of jobs that no longer existed. Manuals. Tipper stepped over the limp limbs of Tentaculus, wiping hot dog grease on her shorts. As she approached, one of the guys was leaning back, sighting up an extended arm, a J&B bottle dangling from his hand.
"Hey!"
Tipper shouted, just as the bottle went winging toward Tentaculus's monstrous face. The ride blinked, a fiberglass lid slamming down over its one huge eye. The bottle bounced off, fell harmlessly in the dirt. Tipper stomped forward.
"Dick, these are functional rides."
The group turned. She found herself facing 4 teenage sneers.
"Doesn't look too functional to me."
The guy who'd thrown the bottle kicked a limp tentacle, a hose of compressed air sheathed in piezo canvas.
"Well, they don't get a lot of riders," Tipper said, "but that doesn't mean..."
She wasn't in a mood to argue.
"Look, I'm just saying, be respectful, okay?"
respectful?
The guy lifted his scruffy chin.
And who are you? The ride fairy?
Snickers all around. I'm an operator, Tipper said. And you? But suddenly, a boy broke free of the group. He was the tallest by far, and the only clean-shaven one, dressed in an airman's jacket and carpenter's pants. Long black hair reached to his shoulders.
Hey, I know you.
He tipped his head toward the grounds.
You run the snake, over by the haunted house, with that Chinese lady and the mean-looking cowgirl.
Their names, Tipper said, are Susie and Amy. The guy wasn't fazed by her tone.
I've seen you working. You know your stuff.
There's nothing to know. Tipper hesitated. The rides do all the work, mostly.
Sure.
The boy looked up at the orphans, hands in his brass-zippered pockets.
Still, it takes a kind of talent, right? Like with animals.
I guess. Tipper knew not to trust guys like this. She'd seen more than enough of the type. She had 3 older brothers, after all. But something about him. There was tension in the boy's presence, more intriguing than threatening, like a faint scent of something burning.
Animals? Really?
One of the others sneered up at Tentaculous cartoon grin.
Animals are cool, but look at this stupid thing.
The tall boy and Tipper both ignored him.
Luke.
He held out a hand.
You're Tip, huh? I'm always hearing that old lady shout your name.
Susie. That's the old lady. She's not old, though. She's only like 50. I'm Tipply. Tipper. She gave Luke's hand a single brisk pump.
You're on a break? Well, I wonder, Tipper.
He grinned, and this much was true. He was dazzlingly handsome.
I wonder if you could give me a hand.
The fair's parking lot had seemed vast and cracked that night, the site of a mall that never got built. The cars were packed so tight you couldn't even squeeze between them. The drivers would have to summon them through the valet station. Crazy, the navigational skills of machines. Luke went to a section of the lot marked off with chains where old cars had been parked at madcap angles. Pickups, mod jobs, a vintage Corvette. The antique bodies and scattershot parking betrayed what signs on the pavement confirmed. Human drivers only. No auto drive beyond this point. Luke pointed.
Mine's over there.
The vehicle made Tipper gasp and laugh at once. It was a courier truck, squeezed between 2 streetlight pedestals, the logo of the company still showing under a hasty spray paint job. The thing was modded in a serious way. Integrated tire wheels, expanded cab, tinted windows, custom cut and sealed into 3D printed panels hung on a modular frame. The cargo box rode low. Tipper suspected more than package sorting machinery had been stored away back there.
Home sweet home.
Luke pounded the box.
Got a bed back here. Internet. Built-in fridge. The best game hookup you'll ever see. With a ride like this, who needs property taxes, huh?
Tipper followed him along the vehicle's fiberglass flank. The compact design, the lightweight frame, the aerodynamic lines. It was obviously a computer-driven truck, built for maximum speed on the shipping-only roads, never meant for a human driver. She peered at him. So you drive this thing?
Trying to. That's why you're here.
He popped open the door, a maintenance hatch he'd expanded to fit his makeshift cab.
Inside, the components had been shifted and rebuilt, making room, just barely, for a driver and passenger. A carbon fiber NASCAR seat, crudely cabled to the frame, took up most of the space. An ancient Mini Cooper steering wheel bloomed like a thistle from a 2-foot exposed column. The pedal system looked like something from an old church organ. Although the interface for the computer was in place, showing all systems normal, Tipper assumed it had been clipped out of the loop. Her older brothers, car jocks all, would have heartily approved. Cars ought to be an open book, they thought. No hidden triggers, no mechanical turks. They wanted to pull back the curtain from the auto-driving wizard, put the driver in control. She ran her hands over the welding. No way this is legal.
No way, Luke agreed with a grin.
He grabbed the hatch, contracted his body, and half jumped, half tumbled into the jackleg seat.
They're still using the same parts as the trucker days. You just have to load them up with different stuff. Legacy line systems, right? All the same tools and dies, injected molds. So it's not too hard to pull everything out and retrofit.
Tipper ducked in after him. You crash in this? You'll crumple like a beer can.
Yeah, I'll be chewed like Trident, huh?
He laughed silently, running 2 fingers round the wheel.
You know about cars?
My family does.
Well, it's this queen bee that's giving me problems.
Luke tapped a knuckle on the auto drive.
I clipped everything I could think of, but I can't seem to shut it down for good. I still need it to
check in at the toll gates, right? Tipper knew how this stuff worked. Or they'll snap your plates and call it in as a malfunction.
Right. So Mother Brain here has to be awake and talking. Only thing is, I tried to code feedback in for all the connectivity checks. Edge stitching, they call it. So the program, like, talks back to itself?
Right, I know.
Well, it's not working. She keeps noticing she's disconnected and shouting alerts at other drivers. So everywhere I go, all the cars around me are getting these alarms, like I'm a runaway truck. It gives me a nice open road, but...
Tipper edged him over, sliding in. You need to shut off the emergency alerts. It's got one of those AI security systems, right? So just give it your info in a statement. Tell it you're taking legal responsibility as a human being. It's federal law. The car has to...
Exactly.
Luke was holding out his license. His phone.
That's all I need you to do.
Tipper sighed. She should have known. All right. She waved him out of her space. Hand it over. Taking Luke's license, she keyed on the comm. The touch interface showed a smiling cartoon truck.
Sorry, Luke said with shy pride. It's just that I don't...
You don't talk to robots.
I get it.
Tipper did the old touchscreen finger dance, darting glances at his workman's clothes. I should have guessed. Luke smoothed his airman's jacket over the road worker's vest underneath.
It's kind of a code with me.
Right. I know. You're a manual. She keyed her way into the security system.
I wouldn't use that label, Luke shrugged. I mean, I'm not all hardcore about it. I don't go all the way. I don't get into sabotage.
Typing in the last commands one-handed, Tipper pulled out her strapless Navy watch. 10 to 10, almost the end of her break. You know, this could take a while. There's a whole interview you have to go through. I mean, federal law and shit. Luke watched her.
I guess you probably have to get back to your job, huh?
Tipper hesitated. 2 shadows, the merest hints of dimples, appeared in Luke's cheeks. He put his hand over hers, gently drew it away from the screen.
Guess we'll have to do this another time.
And that's when Tipper got a feeling, a very strong feeling, that this whole thing wasn't about Luke's truck at all. Now, in the shadows among the trailers, Luke draws back, lips lingering to brush Tipper's cheek. Almost against her will, Tipper stretches up for his retreating mouth, clinging to him with a feral hunger as its boots scratch away across the sandy ground.
I've been waiting for you.
The instant she hears herself say it, Tipper wants to viciously kick her own ass. So cliche. But the problem is, it's true. Every night for the past 3 days, she's spent her breaks lounging around the lots, wandering the orphans, waiting for Luke to come strolling through the forest of hydraulic limbs. Which is why she was standing around like an idiot earlier, wasting time, dragging out her break, when Snake started blasting that alarm through her phone. Which is why she absolutely should not be standing here, grabbing this boy by the collar, pulling him down to her lips and...
What's up, anyway? Where have you been?
Tipper shoves him back halfway through the kiss, annoyed in 20 different ways.
And why are you coming around here now, screwing up my ride?
Sorry. Luke pushes down her hands. I had some things to do. Boys and their vague excuses. Of course he doesn't even answer her second question. Hey, listen, you still up for it? You know, giving me a hand with that truck?
Tipper holds back. She has to at least pretend not to seem too interested.
Are you going to actually meet me this time? Or just screw around and make me lose my job?
He glances up. She can see the whole fair, a brief gold flicker in his eyes.
How about tomorrow? I'll come by. You'll be around?
Till Sunday. Then we're moving on.
Tipper hopes he feels the pressure implicit in those words.
Hey, Luke?
The runty sidekick pipes up. Tipper had almost forgotten he was there.
If we're going to meet with that guy,
Luke waves.
1 second.
His fingers rest briefly on the back of Tipper's hand.
Tomorrow, then.
And she could swear those words are still hovering above her, like one of the fair's ethereal projected signs, even after his body has gone away. The fair has no name, no official schedule. The rides themselves choose the itinerary, following summons on the radio waves. A shambolic, clunking caravan, they clump across the desert, sticking to corridors set aside for drone traffic, free and grand as demigods in this federally sequestered space. With a strange and fanatic benevolence, they settle on the outskirts of towns, sending out their ads and alerts, putting up tents and stalls, declaring to everyone that the fair has arrived. And with it, in buggies and battered trailers, in terrain-adaptive 4x4s, in the guts of the rides themselves, sunburned under dragon tats and open leather vests, scented with the smoke of sweet-flavored cigarillos. With it, as ever, come the carnies. It's 5 p.m., peak family time, and Susie is deep into her routine.
All right, folks, come and meet our baby. 55 long and heavier than a bucket of elephants, she lives on a diet of hydrogen and motor oil. Believe it or not, she's a baby of her kind. Sweet as an orange creamsicle and twice as gentle as a Saint Bernard. She's more scared of you than you are of tigers and only looking for a little help. Give us a hand, and we'll give you a reward, if you can help us cure the tummy ache of our baby snake.
A few families are at the gate. The kids, as usual, look entranced and terrified. The parents stand back with wary frowns.
Is it clean?
a mom asks. Susie's answer is prompt. Snake, like all of her kind, has a grade A immune system. She fully cleans herself after every ride.
I don't know. The mom takes her kid by the shoulders. Hun, this looks a little intense.
That's when Susie switches tactics, aiming her pitch at the little girl. Well, I have one question for you, little lady. Can you guess who Baby Snake's parents were? A shake of black curls. Her mom was the Loch Ness Monster, Susie says, and her dad was a washing machine.
No,
the girl insists, showing gap teeth. It's true. Baby Snake got lost one day, and now we're trying to help her get back home. Only problem is, I broke my phone, and Silly Snake here swallowed all the pieces. You think you could help us get them out so we can fix them up and help this poor little girl find her parents? The girl gazes with alarmed curiosity into Snake's wide-open mouth, up at Susie's friendly face, and then at her mother's skeptical frown.
Mommy, she whispers, tugging her mother's shirt,
and Tipper hears snatches of an ancient negotiation.
I want...
Are you sure?
I really, really, really...
You won't be scared?
I promise, promise, promise.
A few other kids are coming up. It's the old universal need to be brave, to be helpful, to answer a call. As the children gather at the gate, their faces seem less eager than awed. They're really doing it, going down the monster's throat. But this is a gentle monster, and it's all for a good cause.
I suppose there's some kind of policy?
The skeptical mom asks. Susie already has it out. That's me, Susie Choi. That's my license, that's my insurance, and that's my safety record. Go here and you can see the ride stats. 400 units operating in 30 countries, and we've never had a robot-initiated accident. Just in case, me and my assistant will be on hand at all times. But we've never had anything go wrong.
Which is not quite true.
What goes wrong, Tipper knows, is that the kids get overexcited, start fights, cry when the ride has to end, suffer the inevitable effects of too much fairground food. It's the source of all robot woes, human error. But another ancient need is being met now. The shaking of hands, the meeting of eyes, the reassurance of human contact. The mother gives in and thumbs the screen. All right, Nichelle, I guess we can try it.
Yes!
Susie opens the gate. One at a time, guys, one at a time. It's Tipper's job to guide the kids in. That means maintaining even spacing, giving the faint-hearted a last chance to quit, infusing the doughty with a final dose of assurance. Amazing how needed it can make you feel just doing this simple human work. The kids have so much faith, gazing up at her, amazed at the ease with which Tipper stands in the snake's open mouth. In they go, out they come, until at last. Tip. Susie comes to her side. The last kids are bouncing out of the ride, carrying foam pieces of the fake phone, trading them in for tokens at the gate. The adults gather up their charges and depart, listening to gleeful tales of derring do. Susie hangs out the comeback later sign, the little clock set for 30 minutes. I think we need to have a talk. Susie's trailer is a buggy-style unit. The living quarters hung from a big-wheeled frame. Auto drive only, keyed to follow Snake wherever the ride might choose to go. Snake herself travels under a lightweight, woven ceramic shroud, loaded on a radio-piloted, all-terrain wheelbed. Rugged and unglamorous. But the carnies don't demand much in the way of style. Stepping in, Tipper throws back the curtain from her hammock, tumbles into the nylon mesh. Susie settles into her own sling near the door. The size of the trailer means they can never be more than 8 or 9 feet apart. Ultra-compact storage is more a theory than a practice. Shirts have completely flooded the floor. The gallon water jugs, the potted cotton-top cacti, Susie's metalhead posters, the Mojave-patterned pillows. Everything is fastened tight or swinging free. Even with the best in dynamic suspension, travel on the desert roads is some rough riding. It's the ride girl ethos. You stick with your machine, wherever it happens to go. Tipper can still smell the oily aroma of the fair, the cool evening air, the spice of empanada stalls. Until Susie hits the privacy switch, the walls tighten their lignin weave, and there's nothing but the whir of the ventilation fans. Susie pops open her traveling case, lifts out a vape, loads a homebrew cart. The LED cherry cycles green to gold, making the trailer glow with magic light. "So," she says, "how awkwardly unsubtle should I make this?" Tipper plants a toe on the wall and sets her hammock swaying. On the curved ceiling above is one of Susie's posters, Controlled Discord, a metalhead act from way back. Algorithmic music, scientifically tested, calculated to produce acute feelings of unease. Not Tipper's thing. "You know what I want to talk about, I assume." Susie passes over the vape. "Give me a cue. Where should we jump in?" The swinging hammocks arrive at a moment of synchronized periodicity. Tipper plucks the vape from Susie's hand. It's THC extract, hints of green tea and tapioca. Tipper puffs judiciously. MJ juice always hits her hard. "These past couple of days," Susie says, "you've been awfully distracted. Almost like you'd rather be somewhere else." Tipper weighs her answer. "I want to be here, working for you." Susie's smile is unrevealing. "You come from where, Tipper? Originally, I mean. Near Phoenix, right?" "I don't really want to." All right, I'm only saying. You came here for a reason. You could have gone anywhere. So why the fair?" Before Tipper can answer, Susie says, "I'll put it this way. Was it for the boys?" Instead of responding, Tipper sucks on the vape. Maybe she needs that THC after all. "This new friend of yours," Susie says, "our buddy, Mr. Longhair Lothario. His name is Luke. What do you think he's looking for? A good time? A little innocent fun, screwing around with my ride?" "He was just joking. I think he was only trying to get my attention." "Well, he's got it, doesn't he?" When Tipper offers to pass the vape back, Susie waves it away. "I ever tell you how I came to the fair, Tip? Going way back?" Tipper's heard the story 50 times. "Your parents..." Yeah, my parents were crazy." Susie flicks dismissive fingers. "More like out of touch. Wanted me to be a doctor. I told them, Mom, Dad, there are no doctors anymore. There were doctors when you were kids. Now there are machines with human assistants." "Okay, Susie," they said, "so be an engineer. Be the person who makes the machines." I told them the machines make all the machines. You see, they were stuck in the old way of thinking. You work hard, you study hard, you get a good job. Anyway. Susie folds her hands on her stomach. "That's not what I'm talking about. Hold on to something heavy, girl, because you're about to sit through a teen girl's worst nightmare. You're about to hear an old lady talk about her first love." She opens a mini fridge and pulls out a tea. "First thing to point out, like it needs pointing out, this was a long damn time ago. If you think the manual trend is hot now, all these kids running around in pilot jackets and construction vests, hell, back then, this stuff was new. A golden era of applied robotics. Everything 1,000 times more efficient. Exponential productivity gains forever, blah, blah, blah. We were all going to be rich and live in a new age of leisure. Have all the free time in the world. Wipe our butts with golden circuit boards, whatever. And suddenly, every guy in suburbia is dropping out of high school, hanging around in boiler suits and tool belts, refusing to talk to voice interfaces, and talking about how he wants to do real work for a living. Wild. Well, okay. This one kid, my neighbor, he was the type. 18 years old, covered with burns, which he'd gotten by doing honest-to-God welding. What did he weld? Who cares? This was the fringe. This guy worked with his hands. That was cool. He used to run a service ripping brains out of appliances, washing machines, blenders, whatever you brought over. Stupidifying, he called it. Making smart machines less smart. He had this teller machine he'd reconstructed, totally transparent, so you could see it all working. Monopoly money going round and round these big rollers, the whole thing running by gears and weights. And here I was, this little nerd girl who'd spent her life memorizing shit no human needed to memorize anymore. So,